From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Robin Young.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's Here and Now. And coming up, we'll go to San Francisco, where a suicide net will be built under the Golden Gate Bridge. But will it stop people from jumping?
Quite something. But first, to the Middle East. Today, three Israeli suspects in the murder of a Palestinian teenager reportedly confessed to the killing and reenacted the incident for authorities. The murder of the 16-year-old came right after the funeral for three Israeli teenagers kidnapped and found murdered weeks later. The anger over what seems like the retaliation killing of the Palestinian was exacerbated over the weekend when tape surfaced of the murdered Palestinian boy's 15-year-old American cousin visiting on vacation, being arrested and severely beaten by Israeli police. Is the scene being set for a third intifada or Palestinian uprising? There are signs that indicate no, that this is a very different time than the bloody uprisings in the 80s and the last decade. The Israeli mayor of Jerusalem visited the Palestinian family's mourning tent in the West Bank today. Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas has been opposed to a new intifada. But then how to categorize this spasm of violence? Aaron David Miller of the Woodrow Wilson Center in Washington, D.C., specializes in Mideast affairs. Aaron, can you first start by taking a step back? Give us some context here. Remind us what sparked the first two intifadas.
Well, Middle East wars don't happen by accident, despite the conventional interpretation that somehow there's just a spontaneous explosion. There may be trigger events, as in December of 1987, a car accident in the Gaza Strip, which killed Palestinians, ended up igniting a tinderbox driven by popular frustrations. The PLO is losing control and touch with the territories, economic downturns in one of the most concentrated and poor areas of the Palestinian territories, led to an almost two-year series of demonstrations organized primarily locally. The PLO had to catch up. Those were not excessively violent in the way the second intifada was with respect to the use of live fire, but they were persistent and sustained, and they only ended actually with, in a way, with the beginnings of the Oslo peace process, which took Israeli-Palestinian relations on a whole new course. Second intifada was, again, begun in September of 2000. Triggered by a visit of Ariel Sharon to the Temple Mount, which resulted in demonstrations and protests, Palestinians, confrontations between Israelis and Palestinians. But again, here again, in May of preceding that September, during the Nakba Day demonstrations, there was the use of live fire by both Israelis and Palestinians, which was a sort of dress rehearsal for what was to come. So frustration, organization, and a fundamental sense on the part of the population that, in essence, life had become intolerable and unbearable. I don't think that's where we are now.
Well, and remind us, because people are pointing to, for instance, 1987 and saying, oh, there was a car accident and Palestinian laborers were killed in a collision with an Israeli truck, and it was thought to be on purpose, and that's what sparked it. You remind us there was huge context. But people are pointing to that and saying, and now you have these killings, what they see as retaliatory killings, and that's enough to prompt it. But give us the fuller context that you are saying may not. Maybe the reason there may not be that kind of an uprising.
Well, the first and particularly the second intifada created lessons and a legacy of its own. And I would argue in order to have a successful and sustained popular uprising, you need several things. Number one, you need an acquiescence or commitment on the part of the Palestinian leadership that, in fact, such thing is imperative and beneficial. I don't think that's where Mahmoud Abbas and the Palestinian Authority is. I actually don't think that's where Hamas is. I think, in fact, Hamas is concerned about the prospects of intensification of a confrontation with the Israelis in Gaza. Second, you need some sense on the part of the general population that, in fact, they are willing and ready and able to absorb the tremendous pain and suffering and particularly economic dislocation that is going to come in the wake of a sustained confrontation. The second intifada, it seemed to me to be, I mean, almost wholly without benefit. No auspicious consequences for the bulk of Palestinians. In fact, the Israelis, under Sharon's guidance, essentially broke the back of suicide bombings, ended the intifada, and unlike the first, there was no political gain. If the Palestinian public and the polls, Halil Shikaki's polls seem to indicate this, if their priorities are for social and economic development and seeing perhaps if Palestinian unity could produce a different political arrangement, if those are the priorities, then the last thing the vast majority of Palestinians want is a sustained and painful resistance against the Israeli occupation.
Well, a Palestinian leader told the Hamas Daily just this past October that, first of all, there's excellent security cooperation between Israel and the PA, but also the Palestinian Field Command. One consequence of the Second Intifada is that much of their field command was either arrested or killed during the Second Intifada. But what happens now? The Israeli-Palestinian peace negotiations collapsed in April. Coupled with these recent events, what happens?
Well, you're looking for a determinative or conclusive outcome, and the reality is, or a solution. There really is no solution. The Israeli-Palestinian conflict right now is going to have to go through a series of outcomes. And right now, I think the future of this particular violence is highly uncertain. I mean, after all, look what's happening simultaneously. Number one, you have intense confrontations between Israel and Hamas, despite Egypt's efforts to broker a ceasefire. Number two, you have the reality of political and public investment and anger, which has already resulted in the brutal murders of Israeli and Palestinian teens. And finally, you have political problems, both for Mahmoud Abbas, but particularly for Benjamin Netanyahu, who finds himself sandwiched between angry settlers, left-of-center advocates of peace, and more right-wing coalition partners.
Yeah. Well,
so he's
Aaron,
fighting for his political life, not for his political life. He's fighting to maintain the durability of the coalition.
We are going to have to leave it on that grim note. Aaron David Miller, scholar with the Woodrow Wilson Center in Washington. His new book, The End of Greatness, Why America Can't Have and Doesn't Want Another Great President. We'll bring you back for that. Aaron, thank you.
Always a pleasure.